Okay, let me first read you a portion of God's Word out of 2 Corinthians chapter 8. I'd like to set the context. As much as possible, I would love for you to feel what we felt as we traveled through a small part of Cuba and visited with numbers of pastors, churches, and church leaders. This is the passage that the lead pastor who organized the whole thing for us read to his church at our prayer meeting, speaking about us. 2 Corinthians chapter 8, it says, "And now, brothers, we want you to know about the grace that God has given the Macedonian churches. Out of the most severe trial, their overflowing joy and their extreme poverty welled up in rich generosity. For I testify that they gave as much as they were able, and even beyond their ability. Entirely on their own, they urgently pleaded with us for the privilege of sharing in this service to the saints. They did not do as we expected, but they gave themselves first to the Lord, then to us in keeping with God's will." Those are the verses that he read, and he proceeded to minister from those verses. But you know what? I just about broke down at that point, because I suddenly saw so clearly what was happening. We here in Canada are so stinking rich compared to the average Cuban. And we, out of our material prosperity, ministered to their poverty. But they, out of their spiritual prosperity, ministered to our spiritual poverty. That's how we felt as we traveled through Cuba. We felt like we were in a land of spiritual giants and that we were midgets in that land. It was so obvious. And there were a number of times when I was just reduced to feeling shame. Shame because of our spiritual poverty and because of the way we squander our wealth. So in that context, let's look at these pictures. And I've asked Carol to feel free to interject because she's good at telling the details of stories. And I generally overlook a lot of stuff. We arrived in Cuba in the late evening of Thursday night, last Thursday night. In fact, if you've read my Facebook page, you'll have known of our adventure. They first booked us into a wrong room. I walked into a room and there somebody was in all their birthday suit glory. And I backed out very quickly. And it was 10 minutes before we got our own room, and we were pretty tired by that time. But this was a three-star resort, so we couldn't expect much more. But this was the resort, Bucanero, which was about 40, 50 kilometers from Santiago, which is the second largest city in Cuba. We saw some results of Hurricane Katrina. There were a few other buildings that had been there, but they were gone, swept out to sea because of the hurricane. I'm not going to show you too many pictures of the resort because we want to get right down to the ministry aspect of the trip. But just to give you an idea, every morning we woke up, went and had breakfast, and spent the morning hours either on the beach or just recreational stuff. For instance, I went on a hike one morning. But then we had lunch at the resort, and following that we would get on a bus that Rick Hayden, who is the pastor of Parkway Bible Church and who actually arranged this trip for us, we would all get on a bus and leave at either 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock and travel either into Santiago. Well, we only went to Santiago once, but we would go to the city of Palma, where the main Baptist church was that helped Rick Hayden organize this trip for us. That was kind of our home base, and from there we would visit other churches and other cities. So this was just a shot of one of the dormitories of the resort where we stayed, and this is our lovely group that we spent the week with. Down at the very end on the right-hand side, you will see Pat Mensinger. Are Betty and Sid here today? Okay, Pat Mensinger, of course, is Rene Mensinger's wife. Rene Mensinger just passed away in November. The day after Rene passed away, she booked this trip and came with us. And she was just a real trooper and was a real blessing to us as well. But on the left-hand side, you've got Tim and June from Parkway Bible Church. There's Walt, who is the mission chairman of the People's Church in Wyoming. Pat, there's Rick Hayden and his wife from Parkway. And here is Wendy, and there's Ellen from Wyoming as well. So three churches represented, Westmount Park Church, Parkway Bible Church, and People's Church in Wyoming. All three AGC churches went on this trip. And there's the inside of our bus.
In connection with...
Is it working? Did you turn it on?
I did, but it seemed to have gone off.
Try it again.
In connection with...
Can you give her more volume, please?
All the way up.
It's all the way up.
I was just going to say about the food. We women.
It's not on. No, it's on. Check, check, check. It's not working. The light's on.
Lights are on, but nobody's home. Okay.
Okay, just speak up.
In connection with the food, each one of us women seemed to have a day or two when we had Montezuma's revenge. And it's me. When I did my detective thing, I figured out that none of the men had salad for your future resort. Next time you're in a resort.
Okay. This is the bus that we were on. This bus, the shocks were absolutely shot, and those roads are the worst roads that you can imagine. Potholes everywhere. And so it would take us an hour to cover 40 kilometers.
That was a bit of a torture test for our old bodies.
There's some of the housing that we drove by, and pretty abject poverty that we see everywhere. And by the way, the government owns almost everything. 85% of all workers in Cuba are employees of the government. Think about that.
There are no window glass in the windows because it's summer all year round. There are just these
wooden slats and bars in many cases. There's another. Now, how'd you like to wake up in a house like this? And I don't know. To us, it's just such a contrast, isn't it? This is the inside of the Church of Palma. So this is the first church building that we arrived in. And by the way, a lot of these church buildings and churches are over 100 years old, but they are in revival mode. And there's a lot of younger pastors and a lot of younger church leaders that are just doing a fantastic job at organizing and establishing vision and going places. This girl here, this is Naida is her name, and she is our translator, and she works as a photographer, and she makes very little money as a photographer, and also we learned that, you know, it's more profitable to be a chambermaid in a resort than it is to be a doctor. A doctor gets something like 28 to 30 CUCs, which is roughly $30 a month, and a chambermaid will make that much in tips in 2 weeks. And so, this is a result of living in a communist regime. She's a photographer, doesn't make a whole lot of money. She has to pay the government 280 Cuban pesos every month just to maintain her license to be a photographer, whether she has any clients or not. So if she takes no pictures, she still has to pay that tax in order to keep her degree or license to be a photographer. There's a view of the kitchen where the ladies cook supper for us every day. This is in the Palma Church.
This was a very nice kitchen that we saw in our whole week.
But notice just hot plates, no stove.
There's no stove because they don't bake bread. They have to buy the government bread.
But they are getting an oven. We gave them funds to buy a stove. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So everything was okay. While we were at this church, the pastor said, "Okay, we're going to show you something that you cannot talk to our church members about. Our leaders know about this, but our church members don't, and we want to keep it that way. It's a printing press." and they're printing materials there. And he asked me whether we have access to a laser printer that does better than a resolution of 300 dots per inch, because that's all they've got, and that printer is out of toner. They have no toner left, and they have to go into Santiago to get plates made for the printing press. So we're looking at the possibility of shipping them a laser printer and toner so that they have a decent 1200 DPI printer in order to create plates for the printing press. This is, it's not exactly illegal, but they don't want to draw any attention to this. And this room, nobody knows what's in this room except the elders and the leaders of the church. They are printing materials for the Eastern Baptist churches. There's a Eastern Convention of Baptists and a Western Convention, and they're printing materials for numbers of churches in their area. There's another shot of the printing press. Okay, from there we went to a small church on the outskirts of Palma called La Cochia. I mean, the town is called La Cochia. And Luis, what does La Cochia mean, do you know? It's the blade. The blade. I don't know why that town is called the blade. This church is called New Life Church, and Carol and I looked at each other and we said, it's a sign, because Carol makes the New Life butterfly. But what do you think? Is that church in need of renovation a little bit? You don't want to go into there with a square or a tape measure, because everything would be so out of whack. But this church just really grabbed us, and we'll tell you a little bit more about it. There's only about 35 people that are in this church. It was a thriving church of about 100, but their last pastor got into trouble and caused the church division. And so there's only about 35 people left. They are in the process of candidating for a new pastor right now as we speak. And when he arrives, I am going to be partnering with him.
This is the pastor with the white and red shirt of the big Baptist church.
The Palma church, where our home base was. He's the one that organized the whole trip for us. His name is Josue. In English, that would be Joshua. Some of these pictures are not too clear. This is the congregation, but don't forget, this was on a Friday afternoon. So a lot of the men, some of the men were off at work, they couldn't show up, but these are some who did show up. Now, admittedly, one third of that crowd is our busload of people. But I want to tell you, this on the outside looks just like a house. Behind this church, there's a couple of block buildings, and they are building bathrooms. They're thinking that they might not be able to attract a pastor to come to their church if they don't have bathrooms for the pastor. You think? But they can't build things too fast. If they build them too fast, the sudden change is noticed by the neighborhood and by the authorities, and they come and they ask questions. And so they have to build slowly. If you dropped $1,000 on them to say, finish the job, they'd say, well, we'll hang on to it and we'll take a year to do it, because we have to do it slowly, like one brick at a time, because we can't attract attention. And so that's what they're doing. Those are going to be bathrooms for the pastor who's going to live there. And this in the front, it will be the pastor's house. And in behind here, you see the church. And behind that will be the bathrooms. And that's how they're going to grow. Back at the church at La Palma, or just Palma, there's a spread that they put out for us. Carol, tell us about the drinks.
They fed us dinner every night when we got back. And yeah, just two whole lasagnas, and then cola and orange, that's it. In the whole country, even at the resort, that's all that non-drinkers get to drink. Like, they have every kind of liquor imaginable, but that's all we drank all week. And
here we are meeting with the leaders of the church at Palma. I think the name of the church was Mount Sinai Baptist Church. That's it. The leaders, each of them shared what their responsibilities were, and I'm telling you, they had a minister of evangelism. They had a minister for seniors. They had a minister for children's ministry. And they were each asked to share what they are doing. And every one of them had such a clear vision and a clear understanding of where they were going and what they were going to do. It just blew me away. They are far more organized than we are in terms of vision and expressing their vision, and with a passion that I just blew us away.
Anything nice you see, like those really nice marble floors and walls and that, were built before the revolution.
Yep. And any renovations are always done inside where it can't be seen. There's Rick Hayden sharing from our point of view. It was rather embarrassing, I'm telling you. After the minister of evangelism shared his vision, and I asked him a question, he turned around to me and said, "Okay, tell us about your vision." And I said, "You know something? In Canada, we are very spiritually dry compared to what you're doing. And would you pray for us?" And I shared a bit of what we're doing, but compared to what they were doing, like, I felt like this small. And it just, and they did pray for us. I'll tell you about that in a bit.
But their government is, there's no cracks in the door that they're taking advantage of in every way imaginable.
So we arrived back at our resort at 1 a.m. in the morning, and that was about the same every night, except for a couple of nights when we made it back before midnight. And there's the next day at the beach. Coral Reef. Coral Reef Beach. And there's a friend that posed for us. He always came around when we were eating.
The only real wildlife I saw were iguanas and little geckos.
These are taxis. Okay, like in India you have those little tricycles. Here we have horse and buggy everywhere. So you got to watch where you step. We're on our way now to look at a farm that, now I got to explain, Rick Hayden from Parkway Bible Church has a Canadian registered charity called Calvary Road. Rick Hayden's been traveling to Cuba for 7 years now, just like John Harder does. Through Calvary Road, they actually bought a farm, a 5-acre farm. Farm ownership has only been allowed very recently now. You've heard in the news that Fidel Castro has said our system has failed, it's not working, and they're loosening things up. They're allowing now private ownership of small farms, 5 to 6 acres. They're allowing ownership of private property like homes, and they're going to allow some forms of free enterprise in various districts throughout Cuba now. And so this church sees ahead, and they bought a 5-acre farm with which they can feed 1,000 people. As you can imagine, when you have a growing season of 12 months year-round, that bodes really well in terms of potential. And so with 5 acres, they will be able to provide food. And the other thing that's happening is that because the communist system is failing, this month, the government has begun to lay off people, and they have announced that they plan to lay off between 500,000 to a million people. So hard times are coming, and the church is getting ready. And so they've bought this farm. They've got a farm manager. They're in the process of buying another farm that we could have a part in if we so desire. But we need to speak to our missions committee first. Here we're on our way into a farm. I got to tell you a funny story. There was a lady standing by the fence here at that house with 2 flats of eggs as if she was selling them. And through the translator, I said to the lady, "I wish I could buy all those eggs for you and take them back with me. But, you know, we're at a resort and we have as much food there as we need." And she said through the translator, "Well, they're not for sale." And then she turned around and gave us 6 eggs. Unbelievable. Anyway, we walked into the farm. Took us a while. And there's a little hovel.
That's the house.
That's the house that they live in.
There's
a kitchen here just put up with clapboard.
Right, that is the
bathroom. Yep. That's the kitchen there.
The kitchen.
just a counter, really. There's Pat Mensinger and Yvonne looking out at the 5-acre farm that they bought. And there's Carolyn Werner standing beneath a tree. Is this in focus or what? I think we're... I'm trying to focus here.
And in the background is the farm. It goes right back to where the green is.
The tree line.
The gray green is 5 acres.
And there are the farm workers standing there with Rick and with the pastor. And there's a bunch of bananas. The guy's holding it. Oh, I'm sorry, they're plantains. Those are plantains. And plantains are very sweet. Really good. These are yucca roots from the yucca plant. And without knowing it, they're similar to potato, and we had some. But they gave us a whole sack full of plantains to take back to the church. What they do is the end of the banana or the plantain, where they break it off, it bleeds a juice of some sort, and they stick it in ashes to stanch the bleeding and stick it in the sack. I guess to seal it, to keep it from drying out, that's it. And there's a tray of, what's that fruit called? Papaya and plantain. And there we are at another church called Maffa. And this is the church that People's Church in Wyoming, I wish our focus would be better. I don't understand why that's. Is it okay? Okay. Maybe it's my eyes. Okay. Okay, so this guy here is Walt. He is the chairman of the missions committee at the Wyoming Church, the AGC Wyoming Church. And he's standing next to the pastor and his wife. There's Pat Mensinger. There's Rick Hayden.
Another funny story. The only problem we had at customs was when they pulled Walt aside to check him because his passport picture, they said, looked Iranian.
Yeah. But actually, Pastor Kevin Mahon traveled to this church last year, and they purchased a keyboard for them and a few other things, and so we had to go back and see how this church is doing. By the way, every church that we visited, they reported numerous baptisms, numerous people coming to Christ, and genuine conversions. So it's really exciting to be among groups of Christians where things like this are happening. There's Rick in the bus telling us where we're going next. And this is Pastor Alexi. Pastor Alexi, you might know that we have numerous laptops around here. And one of the first laptops I had was given to me by Dave Stubbs, who gets end-of-life laptops from his workplace. They don't bother selling them because his bookwork is too problematic for them. And they'd only get a couple of $100 for them anyway, so they give them away to charities. So I got one of those laptops, and that laptop went to this pastor here. And he works up in the mountains where we can't go. Tourists cannot go into the mountains. Even Cubans, the average Cuban, can't go into the mountains because that's a military zone. And so he's in a church up in the mountains, and he got a laptop, and he was just thrilled with that. Oh, this is a vendor right across from the street, and he's selling, what are those, chupas or something they're called?
They smell like deep-fried tendons.
At any rate, they advertised 1 peso for a little container of something like French fries, and Carol went and bought one.
Right next to that, the blue thing, they're selling bananas, and that was my bad day, so I opted for a banana. But he said there are 3 for 1 peso. And so I gave him a peso and got 3 bananas, and he looked very happy. And I found out later that the tourist money is equal to
25
of his peso.
So she gave. He got about 2 days' wages off of her. Okay, this church is called, this is in a town called Romana 7.
And
don't
that
know.
Is the church, by the way.
And that's the church.
Patio is
The roof is made out of palm fronds. And
behind them is what? You got a picture of their washroom?
I think so. No, there's what they prepared for us. Coconuts. Yeah. Well, coconuts down here.
You can't say no, they're so generous.
Oranges, papaya, and over here there's plantains. But they were just so pleased. And yet these people are so poor. And wherever we went, they ate well because they would eat along with us, eh? But this is not how they eat regularly. And there is the group that met us there at that church. They were just so excited. And so I asked the pastor, I said, can you tell me the family that is the neediest in this group? And so he pointed this man out to me. And I took him aside and gave him $20. Now don't forget, to them, that's huge. That's like a month's salary. So that's like one of you guys getting $4,000. Yeah. And that's the house that's attached to the church. Kitchen? Oh, bedroom. Where is this now? This is another church we visited. They're thrilled about a keyboard there. And forgive me, because I've forgotten some of the names of these places. Yeah, everywhere we went, we saw billboards of Fidel with his fist in the air, along with Raul, his brother. And this is another pastor and wife that we visited. Trying to remember his name. I can't remember his name. But they're growing a huge garden in the back. Wherever they can, they try to be self-sustaining by planting gardens and harvesting their own crops. And this is happening right in the backyard of a city. Yeah. People can raise pigs and chickens wherever they are. Now, I didn't see any of that in Santiago, but in all of the smaller towns and cities we saw this. This is another church that's over 100 years old. Desperate need of repairs. You can see the open spaces. That's a roof covering there, just a metal roof, metal clad. No insulation to speak of course. And when it rains inside their building. Oh, there's another shot of the vendor. And there's some men playing dominoes outside. We asked them for permission. All right, this is now Tuesday night, and this is back at the Baptist Church in Palma. This, folks, is prayer meeting. Okay? No Bible study, just prayer meeting. A short devotional.
By the way, everybody there knelt.
Yeah. When it came time to pray, they all knelt. Kids, grandmas, people that were infirm or had difficulty didn't kneel, but most of the church knelt. And that night, they prayed for Canada, and they prayed for Westmount Park Church. And they promised to pray for Canada all year long this year, because we convinced them that we are in desperate need of revival in Canada. On the bus again, there's our bus driver. He never spoke English, so we always had to speak to him through an interpreter. And there is a mode of transportation that was quite common. We saw passengers in the back of trucks. This is a building permit. Just find a scrap piece of cardboard and post it.
Wrought iron.
Everywhere.
Every single house had wrought iron. Really
Oh, you know what? I have to back up to this prayer meeting. I've got to tell you a story. 2 days prior to this prayer meeting, it was a Sunday evening. A fellow met me on the sidewalk, and he spoke to me in English, and he said, "Do you believe in God?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, I'm a believer too. I'm Pentecostal." He says, "Can I have your email address?" And I said, "Sure." So I gave my email address, and we talked a little bit, just exchanged pleasantries, and then I went in, and I told the pastor about it, and I was rather excited because I made contact on my own with somebody. Well, prior to this whole week, they warned us, when strangers approach you, don't be too eager to share with them, because you don't know who they are, and we always have to be on the lookout. I forgot about that. So I'm telling the pastor in an excited tone that I met somebody, and I was able to tell him about, you know, that we were believers, and I gave him my email address, and he just sort of nodded to me and smiled mildly. And then Tuesday night, at this prayer meeting, towards the end of the prayer meeting, I saw the pastor lean over to our translator to tell her something. And then the translator came to me and said, "That fellow that you said was Pentecostal is here in our meeting tonight, and we do not believe that he is Pentecostal." They generally know all the Christians, kind of an underground communication thing. And then the pastor announced that our team would not be waiting at the back door to greet people and to kiss them on their way out, that we would be going out the back door because we're very tired and we need to get back to our places. And so we were hustled off out the back door and we disappeared. And because that fellow wanted to talk to me some more and the pastor didn't want him to talk to me. So we don't know who he was, but to think of this, that you're always living under this pressure of being aware that there are informants in the crowd who are pretending to be Christians and they continually feed the authorities on what's happening in the churches. So that was a lesson to us, that we shouldn't rejoice too quickly when someone comes and says, "Hey, I'm Pentecostal, I'm a Christian." There was another couple that came up to Rick at our on our last day in Santiago and wanted to sell him rum and cigars, cheap, you know. And when they found out that we were a Christian group, they said, "Oh, we're Pentecostal." So Rick says, "I don't think so." Oops, let me back up. This is a church in Contramaestra. This is the church that our translator attends.
That's our translator gal up there on the right.
Yeah.
And she was so happy to take us to her church. And this house, pastor's house, is the most beautiful place I've ever seen.
By the way, John Harder had visited this church just 1 week before we were there.
Yeah.
They didn't tell us that. But it's interesting to me. I had been praying and I've been asking God, "God, direct me to a church that needs my help, our help, if we want a sister church in Cuba as a church here." And they were sort of leaning for us to link up with this church, Contra Maestra. But we saw that this church was really well off. This pastor is probably one of the higher paid pastors in the convention. And we felt led to support the little church called La Cochia, the one that I talked about earlier that had no pastor and that had incomplete bathrooms. And so after we arrived here and saw how they were doing and that John Harder was there.
She explained to you how the church house was renovated totally by just a North American Christian.
So this is Pastor Joel, that's what his name was. And her name was not quite Janice, but it was a Spanish form of Janice.
This church has a program, for outreach program, that has an arts program where they bring in professors of art and music and what is sort of like a craft corner where we learn more in depth.
And this is the fellow that I mentioned in Sunday school. I forget his name. I think it was Emmanuel. He shared his testimony. He is an evangelist. He's been an evangelist all of his life. He spent years in prison for his faith. And he just glowed about sharing Christ.
For 30 years, he walked through the mountains.
Yeah. And so they asked us if we could pray for him. And so we prayed for him. And I had the privilege of standing next to him. And I put my arm around him. And he was just nothing but bones. He was just a skeleton. And so I was compelled to give him some cash and asked him if he would please feed himself properly for a month and get some fat on those bones. Excuse me. And there we are in that pastor's house as a group for a group shot. Oh, do you see what that is? That's a piggy. Pig on a spit. Sorry. And for the car collectors, can anyone recognize the make and model of that car? That's a Studebaker. 49. 1949 Studebaker. This fellow was so proud of his car. And he showed me the inside of it and everything. And it's an original six-cylinder American engine. Now, the reason that they have these old cars, which I didn't know before, is that the importation of cars stopped when the embargo was put in place, which was back in the mid-60s, right, with John F. Kennedy. And so ever since then, they've had nothing but Ladas. So their place is full of Lada trucks and cars. And now they're starting to look at Korean cars and Chinese and Japanese cars. But still no American cars there. Lots of Toyotas, though. But a lot of the American cars have Russian engines in them, Russian engines and transmissions. So I found that very interesting. There is our translator, Nida. And we have a dream. Carol and I want to bring her to Westmount Park Church. If we could get her here for our missions conference, that'd be fantastic. But if not, we'll still have her here for a weekend and let her share what Cuban life is like.
My dream is that her ministry,
we asked her, if there's anything you could have, what is your dream wish? And she said,
a pair of running shoes for my daughter. We asked her, how come you always look so well dressed? And we thought people here were poor. She said, well, this is my wardrobe that I'm wearing, and the shoes I'm wearing, my daughter and I share them. When I go out, I wear them. So her dream is for her daughter to have her running shoes. So of course I'll send her her running shoes, but more than that, we want to have her share her ministry with us.
Oh, I saw a truck here with this label. Toronto, Canada. King City, imagine.
That's not me.
This was in Santiago in the tourist center, so of course she knows that to do this would get attention, and anyone that takes her picture will give her a peso as well.
Our pastor friend and translator were really guarding us as a group as we walked down the street in the city.
Oh, they were like German shepherds just rounding us up all the time. And there's us having a meal at Hotel Americanos, where John Harder actually stayed this last time.
This is the hotel we should have been in.
Yeah. But this was funny as well. We first went to a restaurant, and we stood there for 10 minutes looking at their menu, all these things that they had. Then we went to order, and we ordered one thing and said, we don't have any of that. Order, no, we don't have any. We wanted a hamburger really badly, and they listed a hamburger, the option with cheese. No, we don't have any hamburgese.
We said, what do you have? They said, pork. And that was it. And Nida explained, she said, this is just written here to prove that she was okay.
Yeah.
When they see this, they know that, it's a regular restaurant.
Now, Cuba is mainly Roman Catholic, if any religion at all. But the Roman Catholicism is mixed with what is called Santeria, which is a mixture of a lot of African mythology and superstition and voodoo. And it's syncretized. So the Catholic Church is okay with it. And one of the fellows was telling us that he saw a lady butchering a chicken and just sprinkling the steps of the church with the blood of the chicken, and the priest is okay with that. So there's a lot of paganism there. This is the Methodist Church. Yep. In Santiago, right downtown. And there's the flag of Cuba. And I think that's our last picture, and it's time to go. So, any questions? We can turn the lights on. We can't answer them all, that's right. But if there are any questions. Sorry? What's she saying?
What's the cost to buy a farm?
Oh, the farm that we... the farm that they own already, I think, costs around $5,000 or $6,000, so maybe $1,000 an acre. And they're looking at a second farm now, and that will be in the same vicinity. They just bought a tractor for about $6,000, and they bought a horse and buggy for $500. And so those are the kinds of things that we could get involved in project-wise. Yes, Marcel?
Who
bought the farm? It's very complicated, and I don't understand it. Because a church can't outright own property, so it has to be done through an individual, and they make these deals with lawyers. A lawyer will sit down and write out a contract that that individual holds it in trust for the church, but the actual ownership is a person that the church trusts. So it's a complicated legal arrangement, but the church is managing the farm now. And what they do is they will raise these crops, they sell them to the church members at really low reduced rates that they can afford, and then they make it available, whatever is left over, to the neighborhood, and that's how they reach out to the neighborhood. It's all done word of mouth, personal, you know, person to person, and it's sort of a parallel market going on besides. It's not black market, but it makes more food available for people that don't get enough through the ration system that they have. Yes?
You know how you said how you can't build things too quickly?
Yes.
Like, what would happen if you were to build it?
The authorities would come in and they would take it. They would say, "That's mine, thank you very much." Any development that begins to prosper, the government will take. Because they're communists. They believe everything belongs to the people, which is them. The farm is hidden way in the back. We had to walk like 2 kilometers in off the highway, such as it was, and we got to the farm. But 5 to 6 acre farms are allowed. Yeah. But the large farms, like the ranches, are owned by the government.
Sugar cane, and that it belongs to the government.
Elizabeth?
About the
daycare. Oh, there things are opening up in terms of free enterprise, and this one church is so excited because they have, first of all, he's a missionary with a child evangelism kind of ministry, and they are going to open a daycare center. And to them, that is so huge because all daycare centers in Cuba are government run. And, of course, government propaganda. And they want to be able to operate Christian daycare centers. And so that's one thing that they're doing.
And anybody bringing their children to the daycare would hear the gospel. Their children will be raised with that. That's their whole purpose.
Yep. That's one idea. Other things that they're doing is simply... in Cuba, non-believers come to church. If you invite them. Here, non-believers don't come to church. That's our problem. We have to learn how to evangelize out there. So non-believers still come to church, especially if they hear a gringo is there. And numerous people are getting saved in the churches. But there is usually a person in charge of discipleship, and he will immediately connect with that person and enroll them in a 3-month course of discipleship, and they will get baptized. And they don't add that person to the number of... They don't consider a growth until a person is baptized. And I think that's something that we ought to be thinking about as well. We don't consider a lot of people think a church is growing because Christians move from one church to another. But that's not true growth. Any other questions? All right. Well, then let's be dismissed. And Alvin, do we have another song to sing? Okay.
Thanks again, Werner, for that little brief debriefing, if you may, of your trip down to Cuba. And sure, we are, it is truth how you say that we are spiritually